All right, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Bet Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara left off with this yesterday. It begins again. Itmar Kara v'shana v'lo shimesh tamidei chachamim. Someone who learned and not only learned Mikra Mishnah, but was not mishamesh tamidei chachamim. The way Rashi terms that is that he did not learn Talmud. He did not learn the explanation for the Mishnayot, the way to reconcile the Mishnayot, the way to deal with the reasons behind the Mishnayot. Therefore, it leads him down a path of Saka Locha that's incorrect or misunderstandings because he doesn't have a clarification of his learning. He simply has knowledge without any context or discerning ability with regards to that. So the Tosafot Shan says what you're suggesting. V'lo shimesh tamei chachamim, shimush mamash. That shelo shimesh tamei chachamim is that he didn't serve tamei chachamim to learn how to conduct himself. That a person who didn't service the Chachamim doesn't understand how to behave, how to act, how to deal with situations. There's a lot to be learned, not just from the learning, but from the way a person conducts themselves once they have learned Torah, or how they deal with that Torah that they have. And so the Tosfot Shan says exactly what you're saying, that Lo Shimesh Tamid Chachamim is literally, that he was not Mishamesh Tamid Chachamim. Belazar Omer Harizeh Am Haaretz. Someone who does that is in Am Haaretz. Rosh Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar Harizeh Bur. It's worse than an Am Haaretz, you know that from the gradations in the Mishnah and Avot. An Am Haaretz at least has some civility or interactions with other people. He might be lacking in his understanding of halacha, of Torah, but he does have interactions that involve a certain amount of etiquette or midot tovot. Whereas a boor is someone who is devoid of any civility, any interactions. He's someone who doesn't know how to be in a social context. So that's even worse. Rabbi Yana Amar Zekuti. Not only is he not an Amar, it's a boor, but he's not even Israel, he's a Kuti. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Amar Zeh Magush. He's a Magush, which Rashi translates as a Michashef. Hachezet Aninayim. He's a magician that captures people's eye. And the same thing over here, that this individual is someone who looks like he knows stuff, looks like he's learned a lot, but he's got a big hole in his learning. And so he makes people feel like that they should come to him or that they should learn from him. But meantime, he's got a major hole in his understanding because he was not Mishamesh Tamidei Chachamim. So here you have a list of different Amoraim suggesting that it's detrimental if one is not Mishamesh Tamidei Chachamim. And each one is saying something a little worse than the other. First one, Am Haaretz, then a boor, then a kuti, and then a magosh. But all of them implying the same thing, whether it's the way that Rashi understood it, that this is an individual who is now problematic because of this behavior, as Rashi goes through each one of them. Am Haaretz is chashud ala masrot vela tarot, a boor, which is even worse. Not only does he worry halachic problems, but he's got civility problems. And then a kuti is someone who is attached to Torah shebichtav and not Torah shebe'alpeh. And therefore he only knows what's written. He doesn't really understand the drushot of the chachamim. He doesn't understand the depth of Torah shebe'alpeh. And again, a magosh is someone who's gonevet to levavot. And same thing over here. So again, each one of these is a description or descriptor that makes him sound worse and worse. But the lacking here is that he was not mishamesh tamidei chachamim, which the Gemara sees as an essential part of being a Talmud Chacham, as well as being a proper Jew. It's not enough to just read books. And to have the Mesorah, you have to learn from those individuals. People need a figure to look up to. They need a persona, mentor, a role model, in order to emulate and to understand how to behave. And many times that's missing when you don't have Shimush Talmud Chachamim. Because even if you know, sometimes the application of what you know is very different than the knowledge. In the abstract, many things make a lot of sense and it seems very obvious what the answer should be. But when it comes to the human condition and it comes to interacting with people, many times that answer is different. And therefore you have to know when the answer is different and when the answer is not different and how to conduct yourself in those situations. And someone who's missing that Shimush Tamidei Chachamim, the way that the Tosafot Shan says it, is missing all of that, that perspective. And according to Rashi, it's even more problematic is that he's missing from his learning. He has all the knowledge, but he doesn't have the application or the way to deal with that knowledge. And therefore, there's a deficit in his learning. All right, now, Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Mistavrak Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Makes sense what Rav Acha Bar Yaakov says. Amar Inche Ratin Migusha V'lo Yada Mai Amar. So that the magician, sorcerer, goes ahead and whispers or says the incantations, and it works, but he has no clue what he's saying. So that's the same thing here. When a person has kara v'shana v'lo shimesh talmidei chachamim, he can repeat all that he knows. He can say over the Mishnayot, he can say over the Mikra, he can spit out whatever it is that needs to be said, but he doesn't know how it works. He doesn't know how it functions. And so therefore he says that the way that Rav Acha B'Yaakov describes him as this magosh, as a sorcerer or magician, makes a lot of sense, because he thinks that they're just these magic incantations that he would do, these lachashim that he would whisper, and everything will be fine. Does he know how they work? Does he know why they work? No. And the same thing here, Tani Tana V'Loyodai Mayamai. And similarly, this individual who learns and has all the knowledge, but doesn't know the application of that knowledge, also just spits out information, but doesn't know how to apply it or how to use it in the proper way. This individual learns, but he has no idea what he's saying when he says over the Mishnah, or when he says over the Halakha, because he doesn't know the reasons behind it. Tana Rabbanan, Ezu Amaretz. What is classified as an Amaretz? As you can see here on the Masoret HaShas, this is not the only time in Shas that this is mentioned. And number two, the bigger problem, which Tosafot already raises, there's no singular definition. The Gemara in different places gives different definitions to Amaretz. What Tosafot says in the end is that it all has to do with context. The context is important. In the context which you're speaking, the Amaretz has a definition in that context. And so therefore, when you go to different places in Shas, you're going to get different answers as to what an Amaretz is, because they're talking about different issues. Over here, the Tosafot Shan suggests that the Amaretz that they're looking for here is someone who cannot be mitzaref to a zimun. The Gemara in Brochot says that an Amaretz, you're not allowed to be mitzaref an Amaretz to a zimun. He says over here, the Gemara is trying to define that Amaretz. Again, it's not so simple, as Tosafot points out. Now, the Gemara says, who is that? Kol she'eino korei kriyat shema shacharit v'arvit bebirkutah. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir suggests that an Amaretz is someone who does not read kriyat shema bebirkutah every day. Now, what's interesting here is if you look in the Gears of Rashi and the Tosafot, it's kol she'eino korei kriyat shema shacharit v'arvit. They just say that someone doesn't read kriyat shema shacharit v'arvit. From our Gemara, it would sound like it's not just the kriyat shema aspect, it's the brachot on the Kriyat Shema. That would give you a different answer or perspective as to what the problem is. If he doesn't read Kriyat Shema Shachrit Varvit, the Gemara tells us in other places, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is of the opinion that in order to be Yotze Limud HaTorah Kol Yom, the minimum that you need to do is Kriyat Shema Shachrit Varvit. That accomplishes Limud HaTorah every day. And so this Amaretz doesn't even get through the basic threshold, which is he doesn't say Kriyat Shema Shachrit V'Arvit, means he doesn't learn Torah every day. So that's one possibility if you don't have the word Birkotah in it, or they don't emphasize that aspect. If you emphasize the Birkotah, then the problem is not that he doesn't read Kriyat Shema Shachrit V'Arvit, but he doesn't read it with its brachot, which is that he doesn't have the context in which Kriyat Shema is said. The brachot of Kriyat Shema explain the importance of Kriyat Shema. They give you the context of Kriyat Shema, which is Hashem's interaction with the world, Hashem's particular interaction with Bnei Yisrael, the significance of our unique relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. All of that is borne out by the brachot that surround the Kriyat Shema. They give context to Kriyat Shema. This person who reads Kriyat Shema without the brachot is missing that context, is missing the perspective in which Kriyat Shema is said. So if you emphasize the Birkotah aspect, that's probably he's an Amaretz, and it'd be similar to what we were saying prior to this, which is that the person who just has knowledge or just says the words but doesn't have the context or doesn't have the background to it is missing. This would be a similar type of idea. If you say the problem is Kriyat Shema, it's more likely along the lines of the problem that he's not learning Torah. If he's not learning Torah, then he's an Amaretz. Someone who doesn't put on tefillin each day, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, he calls Poshe Yisrael. Who's a Poshe Yisrael? That someone doesn't put on tefillin. So over here also, it's the same idea, that someone doesn't put on tefillin is missing a basic connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and a basic directive on how to act. The tefillin are important, as the Midrashim speak about in other places. It is the item that differentiates us from a malek. It's an idea that says that our Maaseh Yadayim are connected to our Rosh, that the tefillin shel yad, tefillin shel rosh, mean that our actions are guided by our belief in a Kodesh Baruch Hu, as well as that Hashem is the one who's telling us what to do or how to act, and that's guided by a Rosh. They're not separate. The Yad and the Rosh are not separate items, but they're one item, and that the Rosh has to guide what the Yad does, or that the actions can't be severed from the intellectual understanding, from the perspective that Hashem and the Torah gives us. So someone that doesn't put on tefillin is missing all of that. But as I am aware, kirshein lo tzitzit bibigdo, someone who goes around and doesn't have tzitzit in their beged, they're missing the reminder, uritem oto zechartem et kol mitzvot Hashem, that it's not something that's a constant in their life. It's not something that is always there in terms of their limud Torah and their guidance through the Torah, because they don't have tzitzit. Their religious life is, I guess, segregated from their everyday experiences and living. Someone has children and doesn't bring them up to learn Torah. Again, this is a problem in the Mesorah. An individual who has children but then doesn't guide them so they will grow up to know how to act and what to do. And there's a severing of the Mesorah in that way, or that he's leaving his children to grow up in a manner that won't have the direction of Torah. So here it goes back to what we said before. This is even someone who has learned, but has not mishamesh tamid chachamim, zehu am haaretz. So even though Achim Omrim, the Gemara says in other places, references Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, up here it's clearly not the case, because Rabbi Meir is mentioned explicitly in this Braita. And therefore the Tosfot Shanz points out that this is not a definitive statement that everywhere it says Acherim Omrim that it references to Rabbi Meir, that just in the majority of places that's the way it is. There are exceptions to the rule. It's not a steadfast rule. Tosfot on Yubid tries to explain why that's the case. It's limited to the Misorot that he said over in the name of his Rebbe Elisha ben Abuya, or to instances where his Memrot were after the Knas was put in place, or where places where he changed his position or his mind, and then they termed it as Acherim then and not Rabbi Meir anymore. So that you could actually have Rabbi Meir and Acherim in the same Mishnah or Braita. Kara veloshana, if he only learned Mikra, but he never learned Mishnah, or is it Bur? Lo kara veloshana, if he didn't learn even Mikra, then alava katuv omer, zarati et Beit Yisrael bet Beit Yehuda, zera adam bezera beima. That I planted in Beit Yisrael, Beit Yehuda. Some of them were men, some of them were animals. And so this idea that if a person doesn't even engage in the basic Mikra, then he doesn't even reach the level of a boor, which is the lowest level of society. This is someone who it doesn't even classify as an Adam. He's missing such basics in terms of his education. All right, so Gemara here quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei. Yirat Hashem bini v'melech im shonim al titarav. Fear Hashem, my son, v'melech im shonim al titarav. With those that change, don't get mixed up. Amar Rav Yitzchak, elu shoshonim halachot. Those are those that learn halachot, or change the halachot. Meaning that they are simply repeating the information without any directive or perspective on it. Similar to what we saw before of Karav Shana v'lo shimesh tamidei chachamim. So don't get involved with these people that shonim, that just rip off the information, just say whatever the learning is. But again, they haven't been shemesh tamid chachamim, so they're just giving you the raw data without giving you any context, information, background, or understanding. So don't get mixed up with those. Pshita. The Gemara says, what else would you think shonim means? Pshita, ma'adu teima, shonim b'chait. That shonim over here means people who are regularly sinning. When a person does an avera once and then repeats it, huchalo, it becomes like muheter to him. The Gemara there says huchalo, elanasek huchalo. It's not that it actually is mutar to him, but rather it becomes like mutar. You've broken down a barrier. You've broken down some sort of impediment that the individual has. And you could discuss people who leave the faith, or who are, as it's called, chuzer b'sheila, that breaking the barrier, for instance, of being violating, or being mechalo Shabbat, the first time that they do it, it's something that is very difficult and very hard to do. But once they've done it already, they've broken down a barrier, and once that barrier is gone, then it becomes much easier to be mechalo Shabbat and to let other things fall by the wayside. So So that's what's being described over here. So you would have thought that's what it means, shonim here. Don't get mixed up with these shonim. These people who do these averot over and over again, who make averot like they are a heter, don't get involved with them. Kamash v'lan, that's not the case here. That the pasuk is telling you, stay away from these people who just have knowledge, but don't have the understanding behind that knowledge. Tana hatanaim mavlei olam. Our Mishnah gives a list of individuals who are mavlei olam. People who ruin the world, destroy the world. And so here, there's an additional item that was added. It seems like in a braita, the Tana hatanaim mavlei olam. The tanaim, the ones that are teaching the Mishnayot, are also destroyers of the world. Mavlei olam sakadatcha? How could it be that they are destroying the world? Tamar Ravina, shumurim halacha mitoch mishnatan. That's the problem. These are individuals who paskin halacha out of the Mishnah. So Tanya Nami Ochiv, a braita that supports that, Rabbi Yeshua. V'chi mavlei olam hein? Halo miyashvei olam hein? What do you mean that these people are destroyers of the world? They're the people who help the world out here. These are people at Tanaim. These are people who are learning Torah. So how can you call them mavlei olam? Shenemar hachalichot olam lo. That it says there, and the pasuk that they're quoting is the pasuk that we quote in the morning. Kol hashoneh halachot b'chol yom uftach lo shulem b'nim haba. Shenemar halichot olam lo. Al tikra halichot ela halachot. So here we see that the halachot are people who are miyashvei the olam. Ella, so what's the problem here? Shemarim halacha mitoch mishnatan. Problem is not individuals who are learning. Not an individual no mishnayot, but people paskan halacha out of the Mishnah. Which is someone who looks at the Mishnah and says, halacha should be this way. Or similar to the tzdukim, who look in the Torah and paskan halacha out of the Torah. Without, again, Torah shebaal peh. The Torah shebaal peh that explains how to use this Mishnah. When this Mishnah applies, the extent to which this Mishnah applies, you need all of that information, as well as the application of the Mishnah. When does it apply? How to apply it? What are the cases that are similar to it? All of that is important in the ability to give psak halacha. Psak halacha straight from the Mishnah will fail because it lacks any of those items, and actually will be mavlei olam, will destroy the world because these people are pasking halacha incorrectly. In that there is a shoshelet halacha, there's a mesorah of halacha. It's true today, even if someone does it in our way here, paskening out of the Gemara or paskening out of the Mishnah without having the perspective of the Rishonim and Achronim that build towards the halachic conclusions. So therefore, you have a gap in the ability to give psak halacha because you're missing the information that allows the application of that which you've learned. Isha prusha. So what is this woman who's a prusha? Why is she a mavlei olam? Why is she destroying the world? Sounds like Isha Prusha sounds like a good thing. This is a woman who is not promiscuous, who behaves in a tzanua manner. Why is she a mavlei olam? So obviously, it's an image that is being projected, but it's not true. And that's what the Gemara says here. Tarabanan tula tzlainit v'almana shuvavit. Katan shlo kalu chlo chadashav ari elu mavlei olam. All of these people are destroyers of the world. And these are individuals who, in general, project an image of piety. But underneath that, they are doing things that are wrong. So here, Betulat Tzlainit, Rashi over here, Tzlainit says, he has a little different gear, so we have Tzlainit, he has Tzlainit, Balat Tzfila. So the woman who davens all the time, Elian looks like she's pious because she's always engaged in Tzfila. But underlying that is some untoward behavior. This is a woman who is promiscuous or looking for znut, but she covers it up with the image of piety that she davens all the time. And the Aruch says, like Rashi, that it's talking about tefillah, but it's talking about a woman who davens all day and shirks her responsibilities. And that she's so pious that all she can do is daven and not do what she's supposed to do. Tosafot over here says that these are women whose behavior explains why they've lost their betulim. Yeah, that this is a woman who fasts all the time. And fasting all the time causes her to lose her bitulim, or her davening all the time. Whatever it is that she's engaged in that's extreme behavior in terms of piety, that causes the woman to lose her bitulot. Meantime, that's not what really happened. Underlying this is that she's being mizaneh. And she's losing her bitulot because she's acting inappropriately. And she's covering it up with these acts of piety that make it look like the reason she lost her betulim is because she was fasting or because she was davening, whatever she was doing, But that's not what is happening. V'almanah shovavit, possibly from the word shovev, which is someone who is mischievous but moves around a lot. That's the way Rashi describes it. Rashi describes it as shivava, which is shchenot, is neighbors, but she's always in the neighbors' houses. She's all over the place with the neighbors' houses. Others describe her as a person who is wandering around, but similarly, the idea being that she is found in other people's houses in other places all the time, which can precipitate problematic behavior or causes problems because she's found where she's not supposed to be found, or she's interacting in ways that she should not interact. There are others that say Almanah Shovavit is a balat tshuva. This is a woman who's doing tshuva, and in her doing tshuva, she took upon herself basically to abstain from any physical interactions or maybe not to get married. And in the long run, that's not a tenable situation. And therefore, this Almanah Shovavit, who basically has set out to abstain from relations, will eventually cave to her desires, and she will carry that out in an improper manner rather than a proper manner. But it's being covered by this facade of a bala tshuva, or of a woman of piety. Rashi over here says that this is a youngster who, in a sense, is a prodigy. He excels at his learning, is great. And because of that, he does not respect his elders. He does not respect his rebbeim. That's what shalom kalulo chadashav. He's not fully ripened, but yet he already feels like he's on par with his rebbeim, and therefore he doesn't treat them with the proper reverence. So that's one way to explain it. Tosafot brings from the Yushalmi. This refers to a child who is physically more mature than his age. So the child looks like he's already 12 or 13, but he's really only 9. And so then he engages in arayot with an illicit relationship. And in the end, he will not be punished because he's underage. He's only 9 years old. But the individual who engages with him will be punished because he's of an age where it already will affect the other party and they will be held culpable for that behavior. That's the way the Rishami explains it. But in all these cases, they are destroyers of the world. Again, similar to those that are found in the Mishnah, like the Rasha Arum, and so on and so forth. The list in the Mishnah, these are individuals who either project an image or cause others to think a certain way. And underlying what they're doing is some sort of conniving or despicable behavior, and that's why they're the destroyers of the world. Ini, is that really true? You're talking about here about a betulah and almanah having this negative association with them. Here, Rabbi Yochanan says that yirat chait we can learn out from betulah and kibul schar from an almanah. What is that? Yirat chait mi betulah. The Rabbi Yochanan shema lahai betulah. Yochanan overheard this betulah. The nafla apa, she fell on her face. Nefilat tapayim, she was davening. Barat Gan Eden, Ubarat Geinom. You created Gan Eden and Geinom. Barat Tzadikim, Barat Rishayim. Created those that are righteous and those that are evil. That people should not trip up, or I should not cause others to trip up. So you see here, a woman is not only worried about her own behavior, her own doing of Averot, but she also wants to be certain that she doesn't cause others to do averot. It doesn't cause others to act inappropriately. So you see from this, the type of yirat chait that this individual has, not only do they not want to sin, but they don't want to be the cause of someone else sinning. And so you see that from the betulah. And again, the idea being that Rabbi Yochanan, in some sense, is saying that paradigm of yirat chait comes from a betulah, and the paradigm of schar comes from an almanah. And that's what the Gemara is wondering about. We just gave examples of where a betulah and an almanah and their behavior does not necessarily represent Yirat Chait or Kiblat Schar, almost the antithesis of that. So why does Rabbi Yochanan say that an Almanah and a Betulah have all those paradigmatic Yirat Chait and Kiblat Schar? And so the answer is, you're right, it's not about everyone, but it's about certain examples that we have of individuals who we can learn from and that we should emulate their behavior. It happens to be that Rabbi Yochanan heard this from a Betulah, and he heard this from an almanah, and therefore he says we should emulate them, but it's not a general statement about bitulot and almanot. Schar mi almanah, where do we learn that from? Da'i almanah, davai bei kenishta b'shivuta. that it was an almanah. There was a shul in her neighborhood. Again, that's the word shivavuta that Rashi translates before almanah, shovavit. He translates as someone who's always in the neighbor's houses. Despite the fact that she had a local shul, she went to the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Yochanan to daven every day. So don't you have a shul in your neighborhood? Why are you walking all the way out here to come daven by the Beit Midrash? Don't I get extra credit for walking a little further? So this is the schar alicha that is well known, but she teaches us this idea of a couple of schar, that even though you have the ability to do a mitzvah, but if one extends themselves, that extending themselves also is an area of schar. Now, I'm not sure that schar psiot in and of themselves are something that is rewarding, meaning that if you have a choice between the closer shul and the further shul, if you go to the further shul, that you get schar for that. I'm not sure that's what she meant here. I'm assuming that there was a benefit to that, meaning going to the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Yochanan was a better davening, or was a place that was more spiritually inclined. And therefore, even though she could have gone to the local shul and it would have been just fine, she walked further to go to a place that enhanced her davening or made it better. And therefore, there's a schar psiot, because she actually extended herself to get that extra credit and to do more. And so then there's a reward for those schar psiot. I mean, others read the schar psiot in the simplest sense, which is when one is engaged in a mitzvah, you get reward for being engaged in the mitzvah. And so here too, the longer it takes you to be engaged in the mitzvah, the more credits you get in terms of your physical exertion in doing that mitzvah. Ki kamar, when we're talking about these bad vitulot and amalot, kagon yochani bat ritivi. It's like the example of this woman, this yochani bat ritivi. Seems like the feminization of Yochanan is yochani bat ritivi. That she was a problematic betula. Here the Gemara doesn't explain it. Rashi explains to us what the issue was. She was an almana mechashefa haita. She was an almana who was a sorceress. And she used to cast a spell on women who were giving birth. And so that they were unable to give birth. And then she used to offer to them, can I pray on your behalf? Can I daven on your behalf so that your child is born? And sure enough, she would go and daven, and then the child would be born. The truth was that she wasn't really davening. She was just undoing the sorcery or witchcraft that she had put on this woman to stop her from giving birth. And when she released the curse, or she released the person from the spell, then they gave birth. And it looked like she was this pious woman who, when she davened, she was able to get these women to give birth and release them. And one day, there was a little kid that was walking through there and got wind of what she was doing. Pot full of these spells that were causing it to bounce around. And when you opened up the utensil in which this sorcery was kept, then all of a sudden the woman gave birth. So they realized it had nothing to do with her davening and everything to do with the fact that she was engaging in mechashefot. And so therefore this woman who was projecting an image of piety was really engaging in kishuf, which is something that the Torah says is asur to engage in. I mean, this isn't the right context necessarily to speak about it, but as what is the veracity or truth to this type of behavior or sorcery is a machloket rishonim between the more rationalist rishonim, like the Rambam and the Ibn Ezra, who say that there's nothing to this. It's all illusions. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's just not real. But people engage in it because they think it does this, or they consider it to do this, but there's nothing to it. Versus the more, we'll call them Kabbalistic type of Rishonim, like the Ramban and others who say that there is something to it, but the problem is that people don't know how to use it, or because they are engaging in kochot, where they don't have a full view or perspective on what's happening. Hashem runs the whole show. Hashem then delegates authority and certain controls to those that work under Hashem or work on behalf of Hashem. And people may get information that's true of astrology, that's true of other types of engagements, where they can get insights or information about what they think is going to happen. But again, they don't have perspective on that information. So they can get information. It's not clear whether that information was something that already happened, something that will happen, or will it happen only in this situation or context? And therefore, they're given information that they don't have full perspective on. It's correct that the Gemara says in other places that you shouldn't do these things because sometimes knowing something causes you then to engage in that way, and it ruins a person's mazel, it ruins their ability to deal with the situation because they think it's a fait accompli that this is going to happen. And so that people tell them they're going to have bad luck or the business isn't going to go well, and they end up, the business doesn't go well because they think it's not going to go well. Right? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So that's, again, many of the problems with this, according to those Rishonim, that there is something to this, but the problem is that they don't know how to manage it. You don't know what it means. And so that's even today with the problem with the, in terms of Kabbalah or getting information from Kabbalists, it has the same problem, which is that it doesn't mean that the information is incorrect. It is the perspective or context or guide that this information gives is unclear. And therefore having the information may not be so useful because the information itself is not telling you anything. My katan shelo kalu chalo chadashav. What is this concept of a katan shelo kalu lo chadashav? This is the way they explained it. Tamar Chacham kicks off his rebbeim. Again, this is someone who is immature or is a young whippersnapper, and he thinks that he's already on the level of his rebbeim, so he kicks away his rebbeim where he doesn't speak to them or treat them respectfully. And Rashi says over here that he's called a katan shlo kalu lo chadushav adei sheyamav mitkatzrim, because his life is cut short by this. And that might be a midah keneged midah, either because he jumped the gun to, quote-unquote, push out his rebbeim or rebel against his rebbeim, therefore he's punished with death. Or others suggest that he feels like his time has come, and he's waiting for the older generation to die, so he wants the older generation to die so that he can take their place. And therefore midah keneged midah is yamav mit katrim, that his life is cut short by that. This is a Talmud who is not ripe, meaning that he does not reach the point where he can give psak halacha yet, but he is giving psak halacha. Tam Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav May Dichtiv. What is meant by the pasuk? Rabim Chalalim Hepila Vatsumim Kol Harugeha. This is referring to a woman here, a woman of possibly ill repute. For a person who gets involved with this type of woman, don't think that you're just going to walk away clean from this situation. Kiz Rabim Chalalim Hepila. She's left behind many corpses, Vatsumim Kol Harugeha, and many have died by her hand. You're not going to be any better than the others. You're not going to escape the fate of all those others that engage with her. But now the Gemara is using it as a mashal. Ki rabim chalalim hepila, ze tamar hacham shlo gya lo ra moreh. It leaves behind many corpses. That's a tamar chacham who does not have the ability to give psak halacha, but gives it anyway. So Rashi explains here, ki rabim chalalim hepila, that hepila is from the word nefel, somebody who's premature. And rabim is the rabim, that the public is hurt by this individual because he's giving psak halacha before he's supposed to, before his time, and then he causes others to sin, and that's what's meant by kirabim chalalim epila. Vatsumim kol arugah ze tamur chacham shegia lo ra ve'einu moreh. This is tamur chacham has the ability to give psak halacha and doesn't give psak halacha. The way the Rashi says atsumim is v'lashon atsum inav. He closes his eyes or he seals his mouth when he's supposed to speak, and therefore he causes harugim. Because not only does he not give psak halacha, but he also gives room for others who are inappropriate to give psak halacha. He doesn't step in. Someone else is going to fill the void, and usually the person who fills the void is someone who's not qualified to fill the void. So that's why he causes the problem. Not only does he not guide the people, but he allows others who are not qualified to guide the people, and that's going to cause harugim. Va'ad kama, until when? Ad arbein shnin, until you're 40. So here it sounds from this that you only are ra'ui lahora'ah once you reach the age of 40. And that's the Mishnah Navot says, ben arbaim lebina. That's the time that you have understanding, that you can have perspective and depth of understanding to provide psak halacha. Tosafot here has an interesting chumrah in that, that he says it's not 40 years old, but rather 40 years from the time you started learning. As here, it's not clear what that means, started learning. Does it mean learning with that Rebbe? Does that mean learning where your learning's on a level where you could possibly give psak halacha? But that makes it a much later time than just 40 years old. Also, it says it based on the source for this, which is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says it about Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar, that Moshe says to them, Lo natan Hashem lechem lev ladat ad hayom hazeh, is in the 40th year. After they spent 40 years with Moshe, he says, ah, now finally you understand. Now you have the insight. So that's after 40 years that they learned with Moshe Rabbeinu, not when they were 40 years old. So that's why Tosfot says that the 40 years is not counted by age, but by shimush, or from the time that you start learning. The Kesef Mishnah here has an interesting twist, which is, we read it, what's the threshold age by which one is allowed to give psak halacha, which is that it's modifying over here, the one who is inappropriately giving psak halacha, when does he have to wait? When does he become a baal hora'ah? So that's the question at hand. The way the Kesef Mishnah learns it, it's modifying the second statement. How long do you have permission not to give hora'ah when you are qualified? And that means ad arba'im, until you're 40, then you have a right to withhold or to hold back. At that point in time, you no longer have the right to hold back. So that's another way to learn. It depends on where this is modifying in the previous two statements. Where it says, ini, is that really true? But Rabba Ori, Rabba himself was paskening halacha. And we know from the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that Rabba and Abaye, the girsa there is a machok rishonim, it's Rava or Abaye or Rabba and Abaye, Rabba seems to be the proper girsa, that they were from Beit Eli, and therefore they did not live a long life. Rabba lived 40 years and Abaye died after 60 years. So Rabba only lived 40 years. And we know he's a huge posek and he was a gadol ador. So obviously he only lived until he was 40. Then he was giving psak halacha before he was 40. So then how could he do that? The answer is bishavin. But there's another qualifying statement here. Bishavin. Rashi says, im shaveh the gadol ayir. That if he is on the same level as the gadol ayir, he has permission to give psak halacha. The Tosfot over here, quote, says that the Ri has a problem with that. Well, Ri perish, the Mayir Badam, Shnechnas Leir Shiesham Chacham. It's talking about a person who goes into a city where there's already an existing Chacham, Mora Taman, that who's giving Psak Halacha, Lo Ta'avi Gavar Afilu B'Shavin. There you don't have a right to engage in Psak Halacha, even if you're on par with that individual. Avam Hu Kavua Be'ir Kamoto. On the other hand, if you grew up in the city together, B'Shavelo B'Chochma, and you're on par with this individual, Mutar lo lahorot kamo perish Rashi. So here he makes a distinction between how you came to this location and when are you permitted to give psak halacha. If you enter a situation from the outside and you're an outsider of the situation, then just being on par is not enough for you to give psak halacha. You have to be even greater than the existing posek that's there, and then you can give psak halacha. On the other hand, if you grow up in the place and you haven't moved, I mean, this is where you grew up, this is where you learned, then being a posek in that situation, you just have to be on par with the existing poskim. You don't have to exceed them in order to give psak halacha. Because where you grew up, you have a right to give hora'ah. Where is your home base? There you have a right to give hora'ah as long as you are on par with those individuals that are giving hora'ah. So that's what happened here with Rabba. Rabba either was on par or exceeded anybody who was there, and therefore he became a posek because out of necessity. He becomes a posek, which is makom shenish, kishtalo leodish, where there's no one else who can do it. You have to step forth to do it, even though you might be young, and maybe even not completely in control, but you have to do where nobody else can do. Right now, the Gemara says, Tarabanan, shiv'a prushinein. There are seven types of prushim. Prushim that we're speaking about here are not just prushim in general. These are prushim that are similar to the genre of prushim that we spoke about in our Mishnah. These are individuals, again, who are acting in a certain way or projecting a certain behavior, but are lying that it's problematic or there is rot on the inside. First is a parush shechmi, parush nikfi is number two, three is parush kizai, parush meduchia is four, five is parush machovuti v'esena, six is parush me'ava, and seven is parush me'ira. Now the Gemara explains each one of them. Parush shechmi, zeho se masei shechem. This is a person who acts like shechem. The way Rashi describes it is that this is a person who gets like a brit milah and doesn't intend to do it. He's just doing it because that gets him to the goal that he wants. Gets a brit milah because then he gets to interact with Bnei Yaakov. The people of Shechem were not intent on getting brit milah. They did it because they thought they would get benefit from getting a brit milah. So it's got to be something less than even lowly shema. It's not even lowly shema. They're simply doing it because of the benefits that they're going to derive from this. Right, so that Gemara will say in a second. That's why some Mifrashim don't like this way of explaining it. And they explain it, Maaseh Shechem is that a person who does something wrong and then afterwards tries to rectify it by doing something right. So over here he raped Dina and now he wants to rectify it by getting a Brit Milah. So that's a Maaseh Shechem, which is that you're trying to cover up for things that you've done by somehow taking on some pious act that will rectify that situation. Parush nikfi, the word nikof means to bang one's legs. Gemara uses it with someone whose knees bang together. So zeam nakif et raglav. This is someone who bangs his legs together. Rashi explains over here, malech b'shiflut. He's a person who walks around in a humble manner. Ekev b'tzad godel, which is that he walks heel to toe, small steps. Ve'enu meirim raglav min aretz. He doesn't raise his feet from the ground. That's more like shuffling. Mitokach menakef etzbuta ba'avanim. And there, because of that, he stubs his toes on the rocks or gets into cuts and cut up for that. Again, here he's projecting an image of piety or tzniut because of the way that he walks. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, in the beginning of Avodah Zarah, describes Rabbi Hananiah ben Trajon, his wife and his daughter that were punished by the Romans. The Gemara asks, why were they punished? So it talks about Rabbi Hananiah ben Trajon because he was Hoget Hashem Berabim, and then his wife is punished because she was Lomicha B'yado, and then his daughter is punished because the Gemara says that she used to walk B'tzniut. It seems strange, she used to walk B'tzniut, and the Gemara's description of walking B'tzniut over there is that she used to walk B'goldo B'tzad Ekev, that she used to walk in this way, very short, small steps that made her Tzanua. The Gemara there says she used to do it in front of the Roman legions, in front of the troops that were there. What seems to be the problem there is that she was trying through her tzniut, not to be tzanua, but rather to attract attention. Tzniut is not just a matter of inches, but it's also a matter of attitude. And so over here, one can use tzniut to not be tzanua, which is that they can use the tzniut to attract more attention rather than less attention. That seems to be the pshat with regards to the daughter of Rav Hananiah ben Trajon, and therefore she's placed into the kubata zonot. She's put into the Kubata Zonot because here she wanted to attract attention, and now she gets the attention, but obviously the negative attention, not attention that she wanted, and the Romans put her in the Kubata Zonot. And she's later rescued by Rabbi Meir, who is married to her sister, who's Bruria, which is the daughter of Rav Hananiah ben Trajon, the other daughter of Rav Hananiah ben Trajon. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz has an unbelievable statement here about it in Shlemut HaMaaseh. He says here that the reason she was punished was because the problem with her tzniut was that she wasn't doing her tzniut for what's the real purpose is to be tzanua. But the tzniut there, she changed the way that she acted when she went in front of different people, shows you that she had a personal motive or interest in the way she was behaving, and therefore she wasn't doing it l'shem shamayim completely. She was doing it because she knew that it made her look tzanua. She knew that it attracted attention. And that detracted from the doing of the mitzvah. And it's an amazing statement because the severity of the punishment is so great here for someone who was doing what was right, but had some sort of deficit in the way that they acted or had some personal benefit from it. So that she, even though she was doing it to be tzanua, the fact that she knew that the troops saw her, and therefore she also got hanah from the fact that her tzniut was causing some attention, even though, again, she was doing it to be tzanua, not to attract extra attention, that personal benefit that she took from it degraded the mitzvah or ruined the mitzvah. So over here also, these are individuals who are projecting a image of tzniut, but in a way that they're doing it, which is all outward in nature. It's all about how they present themselves or how they act. They project this image of piety. That's right, it's for their own benefit because they want to be called pious. They want to be called someone who is a righteous individual. Porush Kizai. This is someone who causes blood to flow from the walls. The way Rashi describes it here, it's a person who walks around and looks down and won't look around because he closes his eyes. So they shouldn't see any women. So there's a person who is so from that he can't even look up when he's walking around. And because of that, he walks into walls. So again, projecting this image of piety, he can't even look up because Chas v'Shalom shouldn't see any women. What you're describing here are people who are taking up extreme behaviors. In general, whenever it has people engage in these types of extreme behaviors, it's usually to offset or to cover up for deficits in other areas. So that Rabbi Rav Rosenzweig always notes that whenever you see someone puts a lot of effort into one area or into a particular area, you have to question whether that's coming to cover a deficit in other areas or coming at the expense of other areas. In general, we try to be balanced people. And if we're shifting something out of balance, then when you shift that aspect out of balance, there's something else that pays the price to keep you in balance. And so that's what you have to always ask in these behaviors. Now, obviously, there are people who are really pious, and there are people who do this, l'shem shamayim, and do it correctly. But many times, unfortunately, it's not that way. And then a lot of people act in these extreme manners are doing it for the attention or for the name of piety rather than the actual feelings that they have or feelings of piety that they have. And again, it usually is a symptom of deficits in other areas. Right now, Parush Meduchia, Amar Rabbi Rashila, Demashpek Meduchia, the way Rashi describes it is he walks over, bent over all the time. Again, there's a person who's mashpil himself, he's humble, so he's always bent over when he's walking around. So he's like a pestle that has like a thick head to it, because he's bent over, his back is sticking out. Parush, machu vativeh asena. Parush, who says, well, what's my obligation? I'll do it. The Gemara says, hamayutahi. That's a good thing. Someone says, you know, what do I have to do? Let me do it. I want to discharge all my obligations. That's a positive statement. Why would you call that something negative? The Gemara says, el damar machu vativeh asena. Person says, what else do I have to do and I'll do it? So whether that's a negative statement, meaning like, what more do we have to do? You know, there's more to do here and I'll do it. Or he's doing it and he's saying, look, I finished everything we have to do. Now what's the extra credit? It's like the kid in the test who finishes early and says, what else can we do? What other work can we do? So that's the same thing here. This is a person who's making a public display of the fact that they've already done what they were supposed to do. And now I want to do extra. So again, they're drawing attention to the fact that they are doing more than they need to do, or they've completed everything they need to do, and they're going to do more. Parush me'ava, parush me'ira. Someone who does it out of love and fear. Rashi explains that me'ava means avata schar, and ira means irata onesh. So these are people who are doing it for the wrong motives, but we can't call them necessarily evil, but they're doing it because they're driven by reward and punishment, and that's what's the driving force behind their behavior over here. Others explain, more akin to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that talks about worshipping Avodah Zarah, mi'ira u'me'ava. Over there is actually a machloket, the Abayin Rova, have had to explain it. So it's interesting that Abayin Rova over here are the ones explaining it, that ava means avata ish, and ira means irata ish. That you're doing the mitzvah because you love someone, or because you want to emulate someone, not because you're motivated yourself to do the mitzvah, but for whatever reason, you want to engender favor with this individual, and therefore you do it. And yira means you're afraid of this individual. You're afraid you're going to get punished. You're afraid that this individual is going to get angry at you. So therefore you do it. So that would be avan yira, driven by avat ha'ish, or yirat ha'ish, again, which is more akin to the way that Abayin Rova speak about it in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Tosfot Shanz brings the Yushalmi that explains that parush me'ava yira is actually something positive. Parush me'ava is like Avram Avinu, and parush me'ira is like Iyov. As the Tosfot Shanz says here, the Yushalmi seems to be cholek and our Gemara here, that the Ira and Ava that we're speaking about here are pure Ira and Ava, completely positive Avodat Hashem, rather than the subpar Avodat Hashem that's being described here by the Bavli. Alright, so now, the Gemara says, Amrulei Abaye Verova Latana, Lotinei Parush Me'ava Parush Me'ira. When the Tana means someone who was going over the Mishnayot to the Breitot in the Beit Midrash, so he would say over. So he made this list of seven here. And they would say to him, leave out Ava and Yira. Those aren't right. They should not be in the list. Now, it's interesting because the way that we have it is Tanu Rabbanan Shiva Prushime. There are seven. If you take them out of the list, they're no longer seven that are there. So that would indicate that maybe the Girsa here should not be Shiva, but rather Prushime, that there are different types of Prushime, not the number seven. But why do they say don't do that? This was to your question before. That a person should always engage for the wrong reason in Torah and Mitzvot, because from doing it for the wrong reasons, one will come to do it for the right reasons. Now, that's not so simple, because the Gemara in other places says that a person who does it shelo lishma, better that he wasn't born. So the Gemara has a very negative approach to someone who does it lo lishma. So the Rishonim have to reconcile between them. You can see that Tosfot already is dealing with it. And that's what he says here. Kol osek b'Torah shelo lishma nasit lo sama mavet. Kol osek b'Torah shelo lishma noach lo shelo nivra. We have all these other sayings that seem to indicate otherwise. So how do you reconcile between them? So he says, near the teretz, ose shelo lishma kagom mirat yisurim, ki hacho mi'avat kibul pras, she'en mitkaven le'ashlim ratzon yotzro, shidivei okach elahanato. So over here, we'll call it innocuous. He's doing the mitzvah because he wants to get a reward. Does the mitzvah because he's afraid of the punishment. He's doing it for his own personal benefit in a sense, but he doesn't have we'll call it ulterior motives in any way. He simply is immature in his ability to deal with doing mitzvot or not doing aveirot, and therefore he's driven by the reward that he will get and the fear of a punishment. So, but then Tosafot says, where's the problem? Avahi shelo lishma. The Tanit of Masech Brachot ain't osek b'Torah k'deleim k'dei lekayim lo mi'avav lo yirah lo sifa chata o pesha she'asata shigugot naselos donot she'afapin she'adash over lo mana mikol tavot libo. So the way that he expresses it here, Tosafot in other places actually gives alternate reasons. In those places, he says that he learns the kanter. The person learns in order that he can slug up the rav, or that he can show people that they're wrong, and that he doesn't learn because it gives him some benefit, some schar, or he doesn't do a birak zonish, but he does it in a manner which is to bother other people, or to undermine other people, or to knock down other people. That's a problematic view of shlo lishma. Here, Tosafot says that the problem is that this individual is learning and engaging and not changing his ways, which is that it's okay if one is immature and doesn't know, so they do it out of avarira. But as a person becomes more mature or in depth in their learning, that should change the way they act or behave. And if it doesn't change the way they act or behave, then you have a problem. Because what used to be a shogeg before, which he didn't really understand, he didn't know well enough, so he did it this way, now becomes amazing. And therefore, even though he's extending his learning and doing more, he's ending up not changing any the way that he behaves, the way that he acts. And that's the deficit over there. Others suggest it depends where a person is in their life. Meaning that the Rambam talks about shlo lishma being the idea that with children, you can give them candies to learn Torah, to encourage them to go to school, to learn, to engage. But as a person becomes more mature, you would assume that their perspective comes more mature. And you're not going to give a 20-year-old or a 30-year-old candy to learn Torah. That you assume that they are engaged in Torah for the right reasons, and that maybe shlo lishma balishma is at certain ages or at certain maturity levels. That's where shlo lishma balishma comes about. But at older ages, we have a different expectation that already the person should be doing it lishma, and he's still doing it for the candy, and then we have a problem when he's older and he's still doing it for the candy. So that's another way to differentiate between sometimes where it is and where it's not. It also might have to do with the girsaot, which are not clear, which is the question of whether it deals with Torah or mitzvot. It might be that shlo lishma works when it comes to mitzvot, but it doesn't work when it comes to limud Torah. So that depending on how you have the girsa here, which is here, it says olam yasoka dam b'Torah b'mitzvot shlo lishma. But the cases where it says noach lo shlo nivra, there it says kol osek Torah shlo lishma noach lo shlo nivra. There it does not include mitzvot. And same thing with the Gemara and Tanit kol osek b'Torah shlo lishma and it says lo sama mavet. So you see that if you would do that, you could differentiate between the cases and say that one of these is talking about Torah and one of them is talking about mitzvot, which is that doing mitzvah shlo lishma is okay because the person does a mitzvah shlo lishma, he'll eventually do it lishma. But to learn lo lishma is problematic because that won't always end up lishma and actually usually ends up going the wrong way. Which is when they learn shlo lishma, they end up either utilizing it the wrong way they're learning or they end up distancing themselves from the faith even though they've learned more. Another possible way to differentiate between them is that whether it's dealing with Torah or dealing with mitzvot. I'm Rav Nachman by Yitzhak, the mitamra, mitamra, or the megalia, megalia, beidina rabba, litpare mahani dachafu gunde. He says, that which is hidden is hidden, that which is exposed is exposed. Beidina rabba, the great beitin, meaning up in Shemayim, litpara, should take retribution mihani dachafu gunde, that scratch themselves up against the walls. The Oroch translates dachvu gunde as people who wear black clothing, which might be a reference to the Gemara in Sanhedrin and the Gemara in Bava Batra, that people used to wear black clothing over Avelut Zion. Again, people are projecting an image of piety. So basically what he's saying is, all of these false, pious individuals, that Beit Din Shemala should take care of them. If we know about them, okay, then we can deal with it, because we know that they're fakes, and then it won't be a problem. Those that we don't know about are very problematic because they have followers. They have other people who think to look up to them and try to emulate their behavior. Meantime, they're an empty suit. They're not really anything. And so there we don't have any ability to deal with it. So that's what he says, the part of Beit Dina. The Beit Dina should deal with those people that are scratching themselves against the walls, meaning making themselves look pious on the outside, but we don't have any way to know what they're really thinking or what they're doing inside. And therefore Hashem should take care of them. Amala Yanai Malka de Bite. So Yanai Malka says to his wife, Al titeri mina prushim. Don't worry about the prushim. Velo meish ena prushim. And not from those that are not prushim. Yanai Malka turned into a tztuki. He also ends up killing all the chachamim. The story that's brought in the Gemara in Kedushin. And he killed out all the chachamim. He was not a favorite of the prushim. Although again, it's very interesting that the Gemara itself has a generally a positive perspective on Yanai Malka despite what he did. I mean that the Gemara does not come down so hard on him, despite the fact that he killed out all the chachamim, which generally fits with the bias of the Gemara towards the Malchut Beit Chashmonai, which is that they, now we're coming up on Chanukah, that generally they had a positive disposition towards the Malchut Beit Chashmonai, and therefore Yanai falls into that category. And so despite the fact that he wasn't such a positive figure, nevertheless, the chachamim, even when they chastise or say things about him, it's usually with a softened touch to it. So Yanai Malka says, don't worry from the prushim and not from the enim prushim. He says, enim prushim you don't have to worry about because I am their supporter. I actually upheld the position of the tztukim against the prushim, so they're going to like us. Don't worry about them. The prushim, don't worry about them because they are really tzaddikim. Because they won't do what's wrong. They're righteous people. And even though I did what was wrong, they won't take retribution on you because you're not the person who did the wrong. I'm the one who did the wrong. Ella, who should you worry about? Minat tzvuim. From those that are colored. This is a modern Hebrew word. The word tzvuim in Hebrew today means a hypocrite. Shedomim leprushim b'shem ma'aseihem k'maasei zimri u'makshim schar k'pinchas. They're similar to the prushim, but their activities or their behaviors are like Zimri, but they want the reward like Pinchas. And the contrast here, which is that they project an image of being righteous or tzaddikim, and therefore they want to be rewarded like tzaddikim. On the other hand, what they really are Zimri underneath. And this is generally the problem everywhere, not just unique to our religion, but to many other religions. But it's usually the zealots in the religion who pervert that which is true or the real view of the religion because they want to be these pious zealots. And therefore they run off doing all these things in the name of their religion, and down deeper, what's inside of them is, again, things that are terrible and evil, and they're just using religion as a cover for this type of behavior. So these types of hypocrites, he says, you worry about them, because those are the people that will end up killing you as retribution for what happened to me. But the real people, they're not going to do that. And that might be why the Gemara picks Pinchas as the paradigm of the one of Schar, because Pinchas is a kanai. And that's what Yanai is saying to his wife. Watch out for those kanaim who want to get reward like Pinchas and be a kanai like Pinchas. But meantime, underlying their behavior is that of Zimri. They don't want to be held to the standard of Pinchas. They want to act like Zimri, but then they want to be rewarded like Pinchas, or they want to act like zealots, meaning that they want to carry out whatever their plan is and substantiate that within the religious context, yet they don't want to buy into the whole picture, the whole bundle, where they have to actually act appropriately, meaning that they have to be religious through and through and act appropriately through and through. And that's where you get this problem of the kanaim who are requesting reward like Pinchas, but behaving like Zimri. All right, we'll stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Chavbet Amudbet.